Welcome to MEC Connect. I am Matthew Yaling. In the first two episodes, we talked about the types of catastrophic files and who to involve on your team. During today's podcast, we'll be speaking with Dan Dalton about catastrophic claim investigation and why you should involve a lawyer in the process. Thank you, Dan, for joining us. Why don't you tell us about your role at Midwest Employers Casualty and how long you've been an attorney?
Sure, Matt. Thanks. My official title is Chief Claims and Regulatory Counsel here at Midwest. I've been a practicing lawyer for 30 years. I've been at Midwest 14 years.
Great. And we also have Patty Reinecke as our co-host. So I'm Matt Yaling, Director of Claims for Midwest Employers Casualty.
And alongside Matt, again, my name is Patty Reinecke. I'm the Director of Client Consults and TPA Relationships. I've also been at Midwest right alongside Dan for the last 14 years, and we're happy to have him here today.
Dan, why should you have a lawyer involved in the catastrophic claims process?
I mean, Matt, everyone hates lawyers, right? I mean, everyone hates lawyers until you need one. And when you think about a catastrophic claim, I mean, we're talking about a life-altering event in which a injured employee sustains a severe injury, and that has implications not only for the employee, but for the employer, right? So when I think of what happens in a catastrophic claim, after you let the dust settle, after there's immediate medical attention, after the employee is taken to the emergency room, you know, the employer is concerned about several things. One, they want to know what happened. What's the root cause? Can we prevent this from happening again? You know, we want to protect our workforce. The other things that go through their mind are, what are the legal implications for the company? Is this a compensable workers' compensation claim? Are there other legal, you know, liabilities and responsibilities that may arise? And, you know, the other thing that they want to often get down to the bottom of is somebody else responsible. And then there's the overarching reputational risk with a catastrophic loss. I mean, these are newsworthy events, whether it's an explosion or a gunshot or a fire. I mean, these are headlines, and the company becomes under the spotlight, and you would be surprised, you know, heavy-hitting plaintiff's lawyers come out of the woodwork, OSHA is knocking at your door, all of these confluence of events happen. And my recommendation always is, you want to have a lawyer in your corner from jump to coordinate everything, to handle communications, activities, make sure that all of your rights are protected. And that's just kind of the first question that I always ask is, do you have a lawyer on the file? Unfortunately, sometimes employers, they have the best interests at heart. They may think, you know, a lawyer's not necessary. That's an, you know, unneeded expense. You know, there's really no issue with the accident, but invariably things creep up. So, you know, I always advocate for an ounce of prevention up front to make sure that the company's rights protected, you properly interface with the injured worker and the injured worker's family. And so that's my advice out of the gate on any of these, you know, serious catastrophic injury files.
That's great advice, Dan. You know, I think with the medical part of this catastrophic or the life-changing injuries that you mentioned, everyone knows to call 911 and they get the experts in on the case and making sure those people have the proper medical care. But the other side of it is really dealing comprehensively with the entire claim and making sure everything is treated proactively so you can get the best possible outcome for that injured employee.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned coverages and workers' compensation, everyone knows, is a no-fault system. Maybe just kind of back up and tell us, what does that mean?
What does a no-fault system mean? Well, I mean, you know, workers' compensation is, it's a creature of statute. And without, you know, boring you with a history lesson, I mean, it's a part of the grand bargain, right? In exchange for this no-fault system where employees don't have to prove fault, they are entitled to certain scheduled amounts of benefits. And in exchange, the trade-off, if you will, is that the employer is protected and its liability is confined to statutory benefits. So when we say no fault, we essentially mean that if there is a accident that happens within the course and scope of the injured worker's employment, well, then the employer is going to be responsible to provide benefits by way of, you know, medical care to cure and relieve the effects of the injury, generally wage replacement or indemnity benefits, if you will, for the time off work. And then, you know, most states have, you know, some compensation platform where, to the extent that the worker can never return to work. They're entitled to a certain level of benefits, either lifetime or capped, and to the extent that they are able to return to gainful employment, but they sustain some kind of disability, then they may also be entitled to compensation for that. So that's just a quick overview of the kind of legal framework of a comp claim.
Thanks. So you mentioned earlier that if another party may have contributed or actually been the cause of the injured worker's injury, that there might be some way to pursue that. How does that get pursued? And what is, what we refer to as subrogation?
Right. Well, when you think about it, I talked about why an employer would want to get down to the bottom of what caused of an accident, separate from the risk management and whether or not the claim is compensable. One of the things that frequently arises in the course of an accident is you figure out that some third party was the cause, right? So the employer has to legally pay benefits, due and owing under the workers' compensation statute, but most statutes allow for the worker to pursue recovery against some other party that may be responsible. I mean, the clearest example is driving to a sales meeting and I get rear-ended. Okay, I'm potentially entitled to the workers' compensation benefits. I can also bring a civil damages claim against the driver of the vehicle that hit me, all right? Most states address the injured worker's ability to pursue recovery from third parties and also address the employer's rights to that recovery, okay? So if an injured worker files a lawsuit and gets money damages recovery and the employer is paid out benefits, well, in some states, they are entitled to recoupment or a credit or, some recognition for, the benefits that they've had to pay out. I mean, that's what we call, subrogation, if you will, third-party recovery. And if you think about it, when you're looking at an accident, kind of the fundamentals of, figuring out whether a third party is going to be responsible and whether the case is worth pursuing in the context of a catastrophic claim. I mean, first thing that any plaintiff's lawyer is going to look at is damages, right? Somebody skins their elbow, all right, that's not worth anyone's time and effort to pursue recovery. If you have a seriously injured employee, brain injury, spinal cord injury, amputation, severe burns, those are life-altering injuries, and that's something that a jury potentially would award a high amount of money damages. So you look at the damage element. Damages are high. You have to figure out, is somebody responsible, legally liable under the law? And then you figure out, okay, we have a responsible party. We have, high damages. Is there a pocket, if you will, that's going to pay for that? Is it collectible? Is there insurance? You have a company that has assets because, you could have a police officer that gets rear-ended at the scene of a traffic stop by a, drunk driver who has no insurance while you're chasing after an empty bag. So you have to have those things. And then you figure out, whether the case is worth pursuing. Now, generally in catastrophic claims, as I mentioned, I mean, these are high dollar, high profile claims, and, they're generally attractive to lawyers investigating possible responsibility. And, lawyers can be pretty creative. If you have a severely injured person, they can, pick at potentially who could be responsible under the law for that injury.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. I know as an employer, many of them work very hard to make sure that their workplaces are very safe, trying to do the best they can do through all their loss prevention programs to keep their employees safe, and to have some kind of life-altering injury like that is devastating to them. So identifying those opportunities for subrogation and to find the party at fault after they've worked so hard to keep their employees safe is a huge benefit to them, I'm sure.
So in that example of a police officer on the side of the road getting rear-ended, say the driver was a commercial driver and he was driving a rented truck. Now we're opening additional avenues of recovery. Maybe we could speak to an example or an experience where you've seen something like that.
Well, let me take a step back to kind of set the framework, just to kind of give you some best practices, right? All right. You have a horrific accident. You want to find out what happened, what caused it, right? Because as I mentioned earlier, I mean, the employer wants to prevent this from happening again. They want to know what their, you know, legal, you know, responsibilities are. They want to figure out, is somebody else at fault? Well, how do you figure out what happened? All right. You got to get to the root cause. That's generally, you know, a fact intensive inquiry. So in the example of and that's the garden variety most common third party liability case is, you know, auto accidents. I mean, most employers have, you know, driving exposure, right? Whether it's somebody going to a conference or, you know, in the case of a, you know, governmental entity where you have law enforcement, they spend most of the time behind the wheel of a police cruiser. So that's something that you see. So, you know, you have an accident, you know, think about scene preservation. You want to make sure that the vehicles that were involved are preserved so that they can be inspected by experts and accident reconstructionists. You know, you want to take photographs, you want to take scientific measurements, you want to interview witnesses, you know, you want to kind of converge on the scene. When I was in private practice, I represented this really large national company, and they had a team in place, and it was something like they called it the GO team. If there was a catastrophic accident that happened somewhere in the country, they had people lined up that would get on a private jet and they would fly in and they would, you know, with their accident reconstructionists, scientists, you know, photographers, investigators, canvas the scene, make sure all the evidence was preserved, take photographs, take witness statements, take measurements, because you don't know what you're going to find, right? I mean, so you brought up the example that, well, you know, what if there's, you know, a rented truck, or, I mean, there could be something wrong with the truck, right? You know, there could have been a defect in the tire. There could have been something wrong with the grade in the roadway. You know, it could have been some other driver, you know, cut them off. But you don't know potentially who's responsible without figuring out what the facts were. So really, that's the kind of first step in good catastrophic claim management, is to marshal the facts, make sure that all this information is preserved, and then, you know, have, you know, people that are kind of experts in the field to kind of evaluate and analyze that information and then figure out, is somebody else responsible? And, you know, sometimes, quite frankly, this is a freak accident. It's the injured employee's fault, right? You know, they're driving down the road and they, you know, overcorrect, or they're on the phone, or, you know, something happens, or, you know, it could be something where there's really no explainable cause, but you don't know that until you investigate. So that's really critical. And, you know, sometimes we see, unfortunately, you know, there's just a superficial investigation, you know, especially in the case of a car accident. You know, we'll talk to our partners and we'll ask them, you know, okay, what kind of an investigation was done? Well, I got the police report, or I'm waiting for the police report. Well, I mean, after that, it may be too late, right? Because the car's gone. You know, the roadway's been clear of debris, all of the yaw marks and the tire treads and all that's been washed off. So you really, while that's an important piece of information, if law enforcement shows up to the scene, if it's a real catastrophic injury, it's usually worth the investment to have somebody out there on site trying to preserve everything and figuring out what happened.
So you talked about the kind of different investigative methods that were taking place on these horrific accidents.
Sure.
So if you had any advice for employers and their attorneys at this point in time, if they got to the point where this accident had already occurred and they didn't have the opportunity to do those kinds of investigations, are there any other types of things they can do at that point to kind of do a thorough investigation on these types of injuries?
You mean if you get the file after the, you know, all of the kind of what I would call these initial things, you know, getting witness names? I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, lawyers have to be creative and try to work backwards. So there, you know, you would still start with, if, you know, let's say that the accident happened last month. All right. And this case came in. I mean, first thing I'm going to do is get the police report. It may have somebody's name on there, may have a witness name on there. I mean, and that may be, you know, the first step would be, okay, this is the only information that I have to go on, right? It's a police report. I know that there was this other driver involved. I'm going to try to reach out to that person, or there was a individual that was listed as a witness, or you might go talk to the responding officer. And, you know, even though there's limited information in the police report, I, you know, talk to this officer and say, oh yeah, I keep a notebook. It's not reflected in the police report, but I have my own personal notes. This is what I found. This is what I think happened. So it's really, you know, kind of detective work at that point. And sometimes the trail runs cold and you don't have anything else that you can kind of point to for a cause. But those are the, I mean, you basically, Patty, take what's available and then you try to unspool that thread. And sometimes you go down rabbit holes or rat holes and you don't find anything. Other times, you hit the jackpot and you say, and by the way, there was a video at this store that had a 24-hour, surveillance, and it caught the scene. I mean, those are things that, law enforcement may not have the manpower or the time to kind of dig into, because think about it. I mean, if they respond to a car accident, first thing that they want to do is they want to render emergency aid to the people that are there. So they want to get them out of the vehicle, get them in an ambulance, and then they want to, clear the roadway of debris. If it's a severe accident and they, casualties, then they may bring out, more sophisticated, accident reconstruction. But a lot of times it's, they want to take down the basic information. And I mean, they're not, going to spend the time to canvas the area. And I mean, it's just, they have other concerns, public safety, injured worker. So you just got to kind of get what you have and see if you can build on that. That would be my advice.
Great. Thank you for clarifying, because I understood the best practices and the example you gave was a wonderful example of making sure you're proactively being able to investigate those types of accidents. But I'm sure with some smaller employees, they won't have that ability to have those teams on staff. But it sounds like you're saying is any investigation is better than no investigation. At least try and get what you can find. Sometimes it's successful, sometimes it's not. But it can't hurt to try and do a thorough investigation to see what the opportunities are for subrogation.
Exactly.
Right. And I think so many times we see these claims 5 years after the injury has occurred and the legal aspect of the claim is still going on. And the witnesses have moved or no longer present, or they no longer work for the insured, and the police report is limited. So all that stuff that's compiled at the beginning is critical, because that law or the legal components of the claim, will last a lot longer than the initial investigation. So I think it's a critical piece that is often maybe not ignored, but isn't given enough emphasis to the possibilities of recovery. So definitely great points that you've raised. Throughout the life cycle of a claim, there's many other opportunities for a lawyer's involvement in a catastrophic claim. What other benefits and what other times would you suggest engaging that lawyer beyond just the initial investigation of a claim?
Right. Well, the way that I would, generally recommend is you get a lawyer involved at the outset to handle all of the things that we've been talking about. I would keep that lawyer on the file. If I was controlling the pocketbook and I was the employer, I would keep them on the file, even if they don't have to take an active role. I mean, most of these are compensable claims or aren't disputes that come up. There's really not a whole lot of legal issues that need to be discerned. But if you have somebody that's familiar with the case background, things may arise, like if you have a injured employee that's represented and you are trying to get them into a center of excellence and the lawyer won't let you talk to the family. All right. How do you move around that? Well, sometimes if the company's lawyer reaches out to that injured worker's lawyer and says, look, the company is trying to do everything in its power to make sure that the injured worker gets the best possible recovery that's out there. This is what they're trying to do. They're not trying to, do anything nefarious or shortchange it. And, so that's just an example of having a lawyer that knows the facts and may know the injured worker's lawyer, can break down those barriers. And there are, other things that come up, from time to time, separate and apart from disputed issues in the claim. But if you got somebody, I mean, these are severe injury claims. These are high exposure, high dollar claims. Even if you have somebody that's basically just waiting in the wings, then they can handle those. And then, ultimately, once the medical stabilizes and you get through the acute, phase of the claim and things are kind of settled down, maybe opportunities to potentially resolve the case, which is an outcome that may be, beneficial to not only the employer, but the injured worker, housing modifications, all these kind of, car modifications, these different issues, sometimes they lend themselves to a, kind of full and final resolution so that everything can be packaged up and folks can kind of take control of their situation. And in that case, a lawyer's there to guide you and kind of navigate you through the approval process.
So at MEC, we try to connect with all of our customers in a way that makes a difference. As a final question, I'd just like to ask if you could tell me about a time when you connected with someone in a way that made a difference.
Are you asking me or a Patty? Patty has a lot more connections than I do.
Well, we'll ask you first, but if Patty has an example too, we'll take them both.
Sure. I mean, a day doesn't go by that I don't, you know, get on the phone with, you know, one of our partners and, you know, kind of help them navigate issues, whether that's, you know, in the changing, you know, landscape of, you know, legal issues or, you know, a case comes down and, you know, some appellate court and one of our partners wants to know what the ramifications are. I mean, you know, I get on the phone and, you know, talk to them. I mean, since I'm a lawyer, Matt, I'm a little hesitant to give you kind of a more concrete example. I mean, just because, you know, we obviously, you know, hold our clients' confidences tightly. But I would say, you know, in my experience, it's a daily occurrence where reaching out to a customer and, you know, helping them navigate through a kind of a thorny issue.
That's a great response. So there are many things that happen in our days out of our control. And unfortunately, these catastrophic injuries are part of them. So by jumping in and trying to do the best that we can to make sure that we get these injured employees back to the best possible outcome is the best thing for them and for their and the employers they work for.
And Matt, just to add on, I mean, like, here's one thing. I mean, since we're talking about catastrophic claims, one thing that we do when we have a catastrophic claim, we reach out immediately. We get on the phone. We have set up a catastrophic claim roundtable where we invite our insured partners, our TPA partners, nurse case managers to kind of get on the phone with us and talk to our in-house experts, you know, our chief medical officer, our, you know, catastrophic nurse, our, you know, regional lawyer. And it's been a great experience because we bring the folks on the ground together with the resources that we have in-house and talk about these complicated issues. And it's been very beneficial, very fruitful. And these, again, are earth-shattering, life-altering claims that, you know, if you have one, you know, Midwest is certainly there to, you know, help navigate through that.
Thanks. Great example. And we've talked about that in other podcasts with the MEC CAT roundtable process and bringing on all the parties to connect them at the onset of a injured employee's claim. So, Dan, I'd just like to thank you for joining us today. For everyone listening, we'd like to thank you for connecting with MEC. We hope MEC Connect has made a positive difference in your day, and stay tuned for future episodes of MEC Connect.